This is the November 8 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County, Illinois, Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, and from Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson, Jackie Vakes. She is in Hollister, Missouri. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. Let's start with this morning's release of the United States Department of Agriculture's Crop Production and World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. Bill Mayer, there were some changes there. In particular, for corn, they dropped the yield by a bushel and four-tenths to 167 bushels to the acre. But still, ending stocks ended up just down 19 million bushels. How did that happen?
Well, basically, it was taken out of the demand side. They left the the harvested acres unchanged, which was where some of the people had questioned that they may lower harvested acres, especially up in the Dakotas and Minnesota prior to the report, but they left those unchanged, and they lowered demand as the trade had pretty much expected by ethanol by 25 million, feed and residual by 25 million, and exports by 50 million. So basically the 118 million bushels of reduced production was pretty well offset by the reduced supply or reduced demand.
And Jackie, how did the market react?
Oh, I think it didn't know what to do, to be honest with you. We had a positive reaction, of course, in corn, and beans initially, went down and saw some pressure. Then, we saw everything bouncing all over the place and ultimately saw corn lose a whole bunch and saw and was still positive, but saw beans slip lower. So I think that, it's complicated because of the fact that we're sitting on a Friday. And I think a lot of people just kind of want to digest what's going on over the weekend to see once, is this real, isn't it? I mean, we all know we're not going to get another report next month. We'll get another report next month, but they won't make any changes next month. We won't see the real stuff until the January report. So there just evidently was not enough food there for the bull on the corn side because of demand.
Now, USDA did change the average cash price for corn. It increased it by a nickel and now sets at $3.85. They did not change the price for soybeans, left that cash price for the nation at $9. And they didn't change really very much in that supply and demand table at all. Total use was down, 15 million bushels, but ending stocks were up 15 million bushels at the end of this because of that. And I'm wondering, Dan Zwicker, when you look at the totality of the USDA reports this morning, did it really change anything very much for corn or soybeans in the United States?
Nothing that will impact it significantly. I mean, we are moving in the right direction in a sense. The corn crop is getting smaller, and I do think you're going to see that crop get smaller over time. Now, it may take more time for USDA to acknowledge it, but I do think that corn crop is probably smaller. And I think the soybean crop is smaller. The smaller soybean crop may be caught in the January final, but I'm not too sure they'll catch a smaller corn crop in the January final because there's still going to be a lot of harvest yet to be taken place when that survey's being taken. So it's just like last year, we had to wait a whole year to find out USDA overstated the corn yield by 3 bushels or harvested acres, but there's a change. There's 300 million bushel error in it, either in harvested acres or yield. And it may take USDA that long to recognize that this crop isn't really there either. And by then, it really doesn't make no difference. So basically, in order to get this market really going, we're going to have new demand factors come into place, which is definitely in the cards. We have to have some weather issues maybe in the southern hemisphere That would possibly get things going a little bit. So I still think you want to be somewhat positive from this point forward, but you know, there's a limit to, I guess, how bullish one wants to be as you go down the road.
Were you surprised, Bill, that they did not lower the yield for soybeans?
I was somewhat surprised. I wasn't overly surprised with that. I think the trade was somewhat surprised. I think the trade expected to see a reduction in soybean yields. Just going back to the corn for a second, I think we need to look at where we were at going into the corn report, too. We were very, very oversold. I think Stochastics at the end of yesterday was around six, something like that, on the nearby month. We have the funds have kind of built their short position up to about 180,000 contracts short now. So I think we're kind of leaning a little bit towards the idea that we were going to see the very small reductions in the production, that type of thing, and the market got about what it was expecting. So I think that's a good explanation as to why the corn prices may be higher here today. The thing that doesn't jive to me on the corn situation is this week is a perfect example. We really started seeing a lot of the elevators get slugged this week. Drying capacity just isn't there enough to handle this kind of a moisture. We saw local elevators closed, short hours. And at the same time, we saw large processors coming in and offering free drying, offering good basis levels, Decatur, for example, still trying to really hustle to get the corn into their facilities. And a lot of the discounts on drying and that were only for new contracts in the case of Decatur. So it just, to me, the conflict here that we've had all fall really is the cash market really seems to be fighting to get the bushels, but yet we're seeing on the future side of it and the supply and demand that, you know, we have more than adequate stocks.
So that's exactly it, I suppose, Jackie, that on the future side, the market looks at it and says, in the United States, around the planet, there is enough corn. But it's just out of place at the moment, meaning it's still in the field, and that causes a problem. And that causes a problem with consumption, at least in local areas, and trying to get it moved. Is that correct?
Oh, that's absolutely correct. In fact, you can see it just in the basis offerings that we've had going on, not just the drying. Anything to get somebody to bring corn in right now, it basically is what we're seeing. And especially in the areas where they have high ethanol demand, you just can't take a chance on running out. But you summed it up good. When you the futures are not reacting because basically we have enough grain. And yet when you look at the futures, it's kind of interesting because the carry in the market would say to you that, they definitely want some grain at this point in time. There's not a huge amount of carry in this marketplace. And so I think that, just generally, we're going to fight this, and guys have just got to stay on top of basis like crazy because opportunities are there. I think one of the things that maybe hurt a little bit today on the corn side, too, was the adjustments that they made for Indiana. I mean, they raised Indiana's production by 14.7 million bushels, and nobody expected that to happen in Indiana. They raised the bean production by 5.3 million bushels. You know, that they left everything alone on Illinois and Iowa, both on corn and beans. And so, it's one of those things that it's there. We're hearing vomitoxin, we're hearing light test weights, we're hearing all these things. And what Dan said is 100% true. We're not going to find out probably, especially on corn, until next October, just because the only way you can balance the balance sheet is based on the ending stocks that come out at the end of September. And that's a long wait. So I think the market it wants to be positive. It just doesn't have enough gumption to go forward. You haven't got enough people who are willing to put their neck on the line right now.
So what is the farmer to do when they see the basis pop? How do they react? And I think I'll start, Bill, with you and come back around through Dan and then Jackie?
I think that you take advantage of the bases on corn. I think that it's really hard to, especially for commercial delivered bushels, to pay any kind of storage charges, or with the propane costs and drying costs on the farm, you have costs there as well. So I guess my short answer to that is take advantage of the bases by either taking a basis contract and being still at risk to the futures, or going ahead and selling the cash grain and then managing any kind of ownership that you want through options on the Board of Trade.
Farmers have to take advantage of strong basis levels. I mean, that's, you know, when that's one thing I like about my career. I spent most of it in the farmer advisory business, but the last 8 years or so, I was on the commercial side of it. So I got to see how big commercial grain companies accumulated inventories and, you know, how they managed that. And, you know, when they want inventory, you just pop the basis. If the farmer doesn't necessarily sell it to you, it's the local grain elevator going to do, because that's what elevators do. I mean, elevators, yep, for the most part, are basis traders. They try to buy grain with a wide basis, and then they store it and try to collect carrying charges. And then when the basis narrows in, when the so-called end user, whether it's a big processor or a big feedlot or whatever ethanol processor, then they'll narrow the basis. So the end user will get the inventory one way or the other. Either it's going to come through the elevator or come through the farmers. So farmers need to, when the basis does improve like that, farmers need to use that. And farmers need to pay more attention to flat price. I mean, that's what they're actually are. They're flat price sellers. And then they can, you know, there's all kinds of tools nowadays to re-own that inventory if they want to re-own it for a rally down the road or a potential rally down the road. But that's one way of managing, you know, cash flow needs, managing their storage capacity. You know, not all farmers can store everything. And, you know, cash flow requirements really begin to accelerate here starting December 1st, all the way through the end of March. So, but yeah, farmers have to take advantage of that. And then if they want to re-own that inventory for one reason or the other, there's ways to do that through options and whatnot.
I'm just going to reaffirm what both Bill and Dan said. They have to take advantage of it. It's especially interesting when you look at people who have contracts that are coming due and looking at having to pay more storage. What Bill said about you can't afford to pay the storage is really the truth. And so I've been working with quite a few people saying, okay, if you take the cash now, and of course you always have people who don't like to take the cash before the 1st of January, but there are people who do. Take advantage of the good basis that's here right now. Take your cash and do exactly what the guy said. You know, do some re-ownership if that's what you want to do. And you can pencil it. When you look at what it costs the store, you can buy yourself a decent call with a fixed risk on it and sit back and let the market do what it's going to do, because you'd be spending the money anyway. You just don't see it, because it's at the elevator, you know, and it comes off the cash price at the end. And so they have to manage every penny that they possibly can. And this year is very complicated just because of the fact that we're out in the field so very late. Today's report reminded me of an October report, not a November report. I mean, a November report is usually just boring. And I'm not saying this was the most exciting one in the world, but it's where we are in the harvest process. And so this is a tough time for guys to be facing really good basis levels and maybe not the ability to be able to take it in. But if it's sitting in the elevator, you certainly have the ability to sell.
Right. So I do have a question about that. And maybe, Jackie, I'll start with you on this one. But if somebody else wants to jump in, fine. So if you're running grain across the scale, we've talked about what you should do. However, is the kind of pop in the basis that we're looking at, if your basis does something that really says I should sell crop, should you open the bin door and sell that? And if you do, should you also put that on a basis contract?
Well, I've done a lot of basis contracts with this improved basis. It just depends upon who you're dealing with and how long the period is that they're offering the better basis, because it's like Dan said, they'll pop the basis and get what they need, and then we go back to the real world again. And so I think, yes, you absolutely have to, especially, the only problem is that if you're fortunate enough to be done harvesting, you can do that type of thing. If you're in the middle of harvesting, it's pretty tough to do. But, yes, you have to be looking at everything that you need to be selling within a time frame. And if you can get a really good basis in a time frame that's realistic for you to deliver, do it.
Hey, Todd, a couple of things on that, if I could jump in here. One, I think don't be afraid as you're looking out there to price some of your corn out of the bin to ask and negotiate what that basis could be. I think there's, as we move forward here, I think we're still going to have some catching up to do. And I think, as Dan, I think, had mentioned earlier, the processors are going to want to get their December and January needs met, ahead of time. So, don't necessarily just take the offer or take the bid. Put your offer there as far as what you might want. The other thing I think on a basis contract that we've been really trying to push this fall is if you're taking a basis contract on a particular versus, let's say, the March, then also look and make some kind of plan, put some kind of offer in is what we're suggesting on the futures price level that you'd be willing to go ahead and price that basis contract at. Trying to avoid the fact of just putting it on the basis contract and then forgetting about it till you get to the end of February. So, for example, March corn, I've got a basis of 10 over the March. Whenever the March gets to $4, I'd like to go ahead and have that priced. Kind of make that transaction all at the same time, I think, is a good practice to get into.
Yeah, I would want to reemphasize what Bill has said is, and Jackie mentioned too, I view basis contracts as more of a short-term strategy, and you need to know exactly what you want to do, because if you the problem with a basis contract, unless you have a plan with it, you'll end up getting caught rolling it into a carry market. And if you start out with 10 over March, and then by the time you roll it to May, then it's even with May. And then if you move it to July, then you're 10 under May. So you lose the advantage of that strong basis. So you need to have a plan set with it. Either put an offer in and it needs to be met by such and such date, or otherwise you need to take another evaluation of what you want to do with that basis contract. But basis contract is a good tool, but it's not a tool as a complete substitute from storage, that you just put it under a basis contract and wait around for the markets to go higher, because the carrying charges are going to eat you alive as you roll that basis forward. Unless you're in a super bull market and you don't have a carrying charge, well, then it's an advantage. But when you have a carrying charge, so that's the thing, is have a plan. And Bill basically kind of explained that. If you do a basis contract, if prices rally a dime or 15 cents, that's when I'm going to pull my trigger, and you made it work. Because probably on that 10 or 15 cent bounce, that basis will probably widen out. So you've really made that strategy kind of work for you rather than waiting around to get caught forcing a roll to the next contract and having to buy that carrying charge.
Bill, what else is on your list for the day as it relates to corn that we should discuss?
Well, I guess the other thing I'd point out is we probably need to, in fact, we've been looking at some new crop stuff on the corn and beans. Corn currently is trading $4 plus on the futures for December of 2020, and beans are up there, were up there at least around 975. They've backed off about 8 cents here today. But I think any kind of, you know, in this central part of the Midwest where you're looking at, you know, typical bean bases, I think looking at the 950 plus on a cash basis is probably a pretty good target to look at from a 2020 crop standpoint. And corn, you know, I'd like to see a little bit higher prices here, but I think there again, you need to have some plans in place on that.
Do we need to be concerned about ethanol usage going forward? USDA has lowered it already a couple of times for this marketing year.
I think they're pretty close myself on the demand. I think it was probably justified on the drop they did today. We may see another 25 or maybe even 50 million bushel decrease, but it looks to me like we're getting real close to the 10% of gasoline usage that we typically have been running here in the last few years.
Jackie, were you surprised today that they dropped the feed and residual number by another 25 million bushel?
I was. It's funny that you asked that. That's one of the first things I looked at, and I was very surprised by that because I'm not quite sure, in all honesty, that I can give you a good reason as to why I think they might have done it. I didn't get a chance to really dig deeper into the report, but I was very surprised by that.
Well, it just makes their feed and residual number last year look all the worse. I mean,
and
by doing that, and I mean, when you do a 15 million bushel adjustment or whatever it was, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's just a rounding error. So I mean, a change like that really doesn't, I don't even know why they mess around with it. Unless it's going to be a 50 million bushel change, I don't even think they need to mess with it. And I still think USDA would do themselves a favor by not printing an exact number and print a range. You know, it's going to be, you know, ethanol grind is going to be between X and Y, and feed usage will be doing X and Y. And I know the trade will go to the center of that, but let the trade go to the center of it. USDA's official estimate is between X and Y. And then as time goes on, then they can narrow that range, and they would get a whole lot, they would get a lot less flack from their reports if they would do something like that. But they just insist on putting a specific number on everything, and they just set themselves up for criticism. So I guess if they like it, they like it, I guess.
Let me turn your attention now to the soybean market. More beans are marketed earlier than corn, that's for sure, each and every year. Is there anything that producers need to be considering at this point as it relates to soybeans? The lateness of the harvest, USDA didn't really change very much, as we've already talked about, Bill, in the S&D tables for this month.
Yeah, I think beans really kind of have, of the two commodities that we're talking about here, I think beans probably have more of a story to tell. I think part of it is probably still quite a bit of uncertainty as far as where yields end up coming in, but we do, you know, have quite a bit of data on yield reports across the country, and our numbers are telling us that, you know, they pretty much confirm what the USDA number is, so I don't know that I see a big change there. But I think the China situation, and one of the things we're hearing is that they really have very little coverage for that Jan, Feb, March period, and with the Brazilian delay in their soybean plantings because of the dry weather, I think they're starting to get a little bit of concern over there as far as getting those months covered. I think if we can get some kind of a phase one agreement signed, I think that we have the potential to get some more beans sold to China and probably increase our exports from what the USDA have on the books right now. There's a lot of ifs in that statement, so I don't know that it's anything certain, but I do think that there's that possibility that we may end up exporting a larger number of beans than what the USDA is currently carrying. Not that that gets us down into a tight situation on a carryout, but it certainly is a reduction from where we started the year at, billion or more carryout.
I would agree with Bill. I think there's more story and more opportunities that can make the bean market a much more positive situation as we go down the road. And if that happens, then that will make things happen in corn, and that may make things happen in wheat also. Like I mentioned yesterday on the Thursday program, beans have to do the pulling here. They're going to have to be the workhorse to lift all commodities higher in the agricultural complex if that's going to happen. And we still got to raise that South American crop. I do believe there's going to be a China deal somewhere along the line. China's going to be a fairly good buyer. And all of that can combine and kind of, maybe give beans a dollar up yet in the marketplace. So I do think there is a story there. And I think I'm not too sure USDA's done bringing down the yield. So I do think there's more potential in the beans. And I guess, if I did sell my beans, I have talked to farmers that had sold their beans, for simply cash flow reasons and whatnot, and they are more attractive price than corn is, they should look at price breaks to probably kind of re-own that inventory and kind of be in position to take advantage of any kind of South American weather problem or downward adjustment in production as we go forward or increase in demand.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I would agree. I think when you look at the bean story, beans are 11% ahead on export inspections versus a year ago. We've been seeing China take beans out of the Gulf, and this week, Pacific Northwest regularly, which is what we expected. And then you have corn coming at 62% behind a year ago. Well, we know a year ago, obviously, there was a lot of front loading going on corn. And we had experienced beans last year. We're in corn's position this year. And so I think that when you look at that, the best wild card, I believe, and I think that's why China is kind of being a little more cooperative, is the whole Argentinian situation and the fact that they have a whole new regime in place with Cristina Kirchner as a vice president, and the guy who is president is a law professor who has no political experience. So they're in a circumstance where the last time she was in power, what she did was she pretty much shut off corn exports. And she raised all of the export taxes on beans. They're expecting them to go from 25 to 30%. And so you could see and their economy is in such bad shape. And, they get paid based on the U.S. dollar. So I think that we have to recognize that the farmer, if that's the only asset that is not depreciating, is not going to be what you would call an extremely willing seller unless he absolutely has to. And so I think that there's so much there on the bean side of things. And now, Brazil has been getting some pretty good rains. And so that's a plus. But I think in general, there's a lot to be said. I think we'll see corn pick up as we go a little further down the road. But I like beans, and I've liked beans for a long time.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media and University of Illinois Extension. You can find it online, listen to it on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org in its entirety. That address again, willag.org. Our thanks go to this week's panelists, including Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri, Dan Zwicker, Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.